Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Ann W. Smith, co-chair of the club's member-led arts forum, and your chair for today. We also welcome our listeners on the radio. And we invite our audience to visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org. We celebrate chamber music in the Bay Area tonight. In fact, Chamber Music Day is coming right up on Saturday, September 26th, live and free. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished panel in honor of Chamber Music Day. We have Adam Fry, former executive director of the San Francisco Contemporary Music Players; Joshua Cosman, chief critic of music critic for the San Francisco Chronicle; Jody Levitz, violist and a member of the Ives Quartet and faculty member of San Francisco Conservatory of Music. And now I'll turn things over to our moderator for the panel today, Kathy Barr, executive director of Old First Concerts.
Good evening. Thank you all for coming. I hope we have an exciting conversation for you. I've been the director of Old First Concerts for 2 years now, and we've been presenting chamber music for 40 years. As one of our board members is fond of saying, we're now as old as Woodstock. We have 65 concerts a year, and we're our mission is to promote emerging professionals, mostly Bay Area professionals, but we do have people, you know, national musicians and international musicians who come to perform with us. So we're offering this program in appreciation of chamber music with the San Francisco Friends of Chamber Music and also the Community Music Center, who are sponsoring Chamber Music Day being hosted at Old First Concerts at Sacramento and Van Ness. Please come and visit us on Saturday, September 26th. I also want to say that the Kronos Quartet will be doing a benefit for Old First Concerts on October 9th. So, we have some questions for our august panel members. And this first one is really for all of them. What is your view of changes, if any, in the presentation or style of chamber music over the past 40 years? How would you characterize chamber music today? So, Jody, do you want to start us off on that?
Absolutely. I think things have changed as a performer quite a bit, in that when I was in school and preparing to be a performer, there wasn't really any talk about having any interaction with the audience other than looking nice on stage, bowing and leaving, and hopefully playing well. But now, both as a chamber music player but also as a recitalist, we're getting very used to speaking to the audience more and sharing our experiences with the audience. We find audiences are expecting that more also, especially with the quartet. They enjoy very much pre-concert talks. They enjoy talking with us afterward. They enjoy hearing us play in less formal situations. And I think that's going to be a trend that's going to keep going, and that chamber music is going to return, actually, to where it started and maybe where it belongs, in smaller rooms, in homes, and in more friendly atmospheres.
I'll just pick up actually on what Jody said, which is that the thing to me about chamber music that I try and remember and often am forcibly reminded of is that it is still something of a fish out of water in the way we find it in concert halls, because it's music that's originally meant not to be performed, you know, by them for us, but by us for ourselves. In other words, it's participatory music in its essential being. And so to hear a string quartet played on a stage by people who can play it better than you is a sort of a necessity of the way we live, and the fact that most of us can't play the viola as well as Jody does. But it's still somehow not quite what that music is supposed to be and what that music wants to be in its very nature. And so I would love it if indeed it got back to chambers and smaller rooms and smaller situations. But I think also, you know, my pipe dream is it would be some kind of a return to the participatory nature of it. But that's maybe a more quixotic notion.
So, Adam, as a presenter, what do you think?
Well, I think chamber music, as a presenter, particularly of contemporary chamber music, I think it's changed a tremendous amount in 30 or 40 years. I mean, the music itself doesn't sound the same. The technology has changed. Electronics is used much more often. Audiences are used to hearing things amplified. I mean, there's a lot of technological changes that are in the background. But also, just in the 18 years that I was with the San Francisco Contemporary Music Players, I saw big changes in the attitudes of composers about their role in relation to the music they were writing for chamber music. When back, you know, in the 1980s and before, I think it was very common to have composers write about their composition of the music as if the greatest artistic moment was the moment when they were writing the piece, and when you get to hear it later, that's almost like an afterthought. And it was very common to hear people, composers, talk about the philosophy of their work and how it tied into the tradition, you know, going back 50 years, and it was a much grander, more heroic, philosophical kind of idea about what music is. And now composers, you're much less likely to find that. Composers much more talk about themselves and their work as if they were artisans, rather than having such an inflated kind of grandiose expectations of themselves and their role in this thing. So I thought that was kind of an interesting change to watch just over a very short period of time, really.
And have these, the technological developments, have they affected you as a presenter? In what way have you been affected by those?
Well, yes. I mean, in terms of contemporary chamber music, music being written today, if you're not able to work with, you know, live computerized processing of sound during the performance, then you're really not in the business. And so you have to have a certain infrastructure to do that of sound reinforcement engineers and computer people and all of this. And it's gotten now to where an ensemble that plays contemporary chamber music, in addition to having a pianist and a flutist and a clarinetist, they've got to have an electronics person who is one of the members of the ensemble and is kind of an artist just like the other ones, because those people have to make artistic decisions as the piece goes along too often. That's a change.
Yeah, that is a big change. Probably a big budgetary change as well. So let's shift a little bit. Now, Joshua, as a critic, what's your primary responsibility in reporting about chamber music? And as a little adjunct to that, what's the difference between being a critic and a blogger?
Oh, my. All right. Well, those are two wonderful questions, but they're completely distinct. Let's take them one at a time. In theory, I don't think my responsibility in terms of chamber music is any different from anything else that I cover on my view. We have an astounding and amazingly broad and rich and various musical culture here in the Bay Area. It's a source of great joy and perennial frustration to me as a solo practitioner these days at the Chronicle that I can only get to, you know, I can only get to a small fraction of what there is out there. And so, you know, what I try and do is kind of make judgments often on the fly about what's newsworthy, what's interesting, what's out of the ordinary and worth attending to and supporting and trying to bring people's attention to. So as I say, in theory, that should be kind of uniform across the board. In practice, it doesn't work that way. What I'm saying is, If a string quartet comes to town and plays Schubert, Beethoven, and Mozart in a week when there's a lot of other things going on, there's a very limited likelihood that I'm going to get to cover that concert, because it's just there's relatively little news value there. If the San Francisco Symphony in the same week plays Mozart, Beethoven, and Schubert, there's not much more news value there, but they are the 500-pound gorilla, and I will be in Davies Hall. for better or worse. That's, you know, that's sort of the nature of covering the territory. But that's not to say that I won't always try and make those decisions in a way that responds a little better to the news value of the different events. But in general, chamber music events, because they're smaller, because there's so many of them, have to work a little harder to get my attention. In this, it's a competitive field, and I, as I say, I wish it weren't, and I wish I could. I wish I had unlimited resources and time and space to cover everything that's going on here, but I don't. You want to go on? Should we go on to blogging? I mean,
would you like to
segue? Yes, sure, sure. On. I'm happy to talk about blogging. I'm a huge, huge enthusiast and supporter and fan of the new world of musical of blogs in general and musical blogs in particular. And I can tell you why. It's because it relates actually to what I just said about the fact that I'm now the sole practitioner at the Chronicle, which is the sole big paper in the area, more or less. I mean, you know, when I started at the Chronicle 22 years ago now, there was something in the Bay Area that we could reasonably call a musical press corps. I mean, there were, you know, several newspapers, and some had more than one, and some had more than two critics, and there would be this flock and cluster of people in press rooms and at concerts, and you would go to concerts and write your review and then compare what you thought with the other people, and you would sort of sneer at them behind their backs and feel jealous because they had written a better review than you did. You know, this kind of thing. And there was a dialogue. And then, you know, as newspapers kind of dwindled and went on to life support, that scene kind of started to dwindle too, and there was a period where I was at many concerts and I was the only person doing any kind of reporting or criticizing or observing of what was going on. And now I feel like I'm in the midst again of a resurgence. There are some half a dozen or more local folks who write who have their own personal blogs and write regularly and go to all the concerts I go to, and we talk and compare notes and comment on each other's writing. And so there's a sense in once again that there's a kind of a dialogue out there and a conversation about music, which without which, you know, a lot of it kind of fritters away. So I'm all in favor, and I know what the arguments are against, and I'm not buying any of them. If you guys want to, you know, bring them up, I can tell you why, but I don't want to.
Well, maybe we'll do that later, won't we? In the meantime, Jody, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about training the next generation of chamber music professionals, and as you teach at the conservatory, you have a good view of this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think right now the first step to training musicians who want to enter into chamber music right now is actually retraining ourselves as faculty members. The model of even 30 years ago, where you would go to your outstanding conservatory, practice intensely, rehearse together, go to a summer music program, find a quartet, win a competition, and then it was done. You found yourself an agent, and you would move on that way. That's almost disappeared, or at least it's very rare nowadays. We're finding ourselves now at the conservatory, and we do have the oldest degree in chamber music in the country. We offer the first master's in chamber music there. We're finding that we need to also broaden the horizons of our students and bring in a spirit of entrepreneurship. We need to educate them in how to do outreach, how to build audiences, how to explore alternative venues, how to self-produce their own concerts. It's changed so much in so few years. Just even in my own studio, I had a student who was a terrific violist, a chamber music major, and he asked me if he could do his graduate recital. We were still on Ortega Street, so at Eagles Bar, which is down the street from there. And I was pretty shocked, but I thought, well, why not? It could be kind of fun, and I could finally drink a beer during my student's recital without. He did it, and it was incredibly popular, and he went on to found Classical Revolution. And as his teacher, I could have said, absolutely not. Recitals take place in the recital hall, and that's where you're going to do it. But as an educator now, and hopefully I want all of my students to go out and actually live the life of a chamber musician, they have to also, in order to have that life, they have to also be entrepreneurs. And we need to start that already at the conservatory level. We can't let them graduate and then realize that they need all of these tools that they didn't acquire before.
I think Joshua wants to follow up.
Can I ask you a question? This is something that I've always wondered about, and now I have you here. I'm going to find out about education and chamber music, and it is this. So I'm a young violinist, and I come into the conservatory, and at some point in my conservatory training, and understand, I've never been to conservatory. I don't know what goes on behind those walls. at some point in that during that period, I have to make a decision about what shape my career is going to. Am I going to try and be a soloist? Am I going to go for an orchestra job? Am I going to do the chamber music thing? And that, okay, I understand that we make career decisions, but let's say I decide to go to be a chamber musician. The thing that amazes me is these kids come out of the conservatory and they're already in these quartets or trios, or, you know, this one's formed a piano trio and that one's formed a flute quartet. And it seems like such a momentous decision, because a lot of these groups then, you know, sort of stay together for decades. And I think, you know, unlike the notion of chamber music that you get from watching, you know, chamber music at Lincoln Center, which is, you know, a bunch of high flyers all kind of sit down and sight read through Schubert together, more or less. And I'm curious, A, how those kids make that decision, and B, what role you play in sort of saying, yeah, you, piano trio, you, string quartet, you, the other thing, and mixing and matching. It seems like almost like being a marriage broker.
Oh, I'm glad you said that, because that exactly is what it is. And all week, actually, I've been talking to, so it just coincidentally, so many of my students are coming to me with these crisis points. I just had a student today who's been calling me, who was offered a very nice orchestra job, but it means leaving his chamber music group, so what to do? It's very hard. What we do, first of all, is we encourage them to follow their dream, but also follow their talent. So that it's a little tricky, because one, you cannot ever discourage a student into pursuing their dream. But if they're not able to, at some point you have to be honest and say, you know, I think you're better suited for that. And right now, especially with getting orchestra jobs, it's so specific, and they have to work on their excerpts so much they almost can't do anything else. So during their undergraduate time, by the time they graduate, I want to get an idea from my undergraduates what they want to go into. And that will help me in helping them decide a graduate school. As far as the chamber music majors, they're usually, at our school at any rate, they're usually looking for exactly that, for the group of their dreams. And it's no different from a marriage. They are looking for people they want to spend a good part of their lives with. And we put them together in these little groups and hope it works. And a lot of times it doesn't. Sometimes it does. When we see that a group is serious and they want to stick together, we do everything we can for them to find them concerts, to get them outside venues. We often encourage them to become affiliates of the Friends of Chamber Music. We send them competitions sometimes, but even more than that, just many, many, many concerts. And also we have to, besides encouraging them to pursue the chamber music, we have to encourage them also to find what they're good at as a group. Because right now, sending them out to play Schubert, Mozart, and Beethoven all the time, it's not really maybe going to make express their individuality unless they're just absolutely terrific at it. So also encourage their passion. A lot of groups have passion for new music, older music, different venues, playing in different venues, music and art, all of these different things. And what I do is I talk to them and ask what they're interested in and try and find something unique in that and then subtly push them in that direction. Mm. But it's very proactive.
Thank you.
Thank you. Adam, can you talk a little bit about the reception for contemporary music as a chamber, I don't want to say relatively new chamber appearance, but as a trend over the last several years? I know Old First Concerts presents a lot of contemporary music, and I'm wondering how contemporary music players was received over the years, let's say over the last 15 years.
Well, the first thing I would say about the reception of contemporary chamber music is that people, you know, should be aware that the San Francisco Bay Area is really one of the major centers in the United States for contemporary chamber music. And I think probably only New York has more activity going on in that area than this area. So this is really a center for it, and I think there's a very good audience for contemporary chamber music here in the Bay Area, maybe because we are not a very old city and don't have, you know, that much history, interested in new things, just like I think the Museum of Modern Art is well supported here. Certainly at the Contemporary Music Players, we saw good growth of audience, you know, over the years. And the more other groups that were playing new music, the better it was. And certainly when the symphony was doing new and unusual music, and then Wet Ink, that really built the audience a lot. They're less focused on that now, probably for financial reasons. But this is really, you know, this is really the place to be, other than New York, for that kind of music.
And I'm going to ask you this, since you're already speaking, as a presenter. Have you noticed over the past 15 years any changes in the business structure you've had to make for your organization?
Well, I don't know, 15 years may be a little short, but I mean, in terms of, you know, what we were talking about more broadly about the development of chamber music in this area over, you know, 30, 40 years, it's completely changed in the sense that almost all of the sources of institutional funding for chamber music didn't exist 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. The government funding of chamber music, the funders, the NEA, the California Arts Council, which existed to help it for a while, and the grants for the arts all date from the 60s and 70s. And almost all of the foundations that support chamber music now started in the 70s and 80s. And so I think before that, it must have been a very different thing that relied much more on ticket sales and volunteerism and poorly paid musicians. And so it's
totally right now.
It's really totally changed. And certainly those things have had an impact on the art as well, because funders have priorities. Often they have social priorities. For example, they want the music to reach underserved parts of the community. They want to integrate composers and musicians of different ethnic groups. They want to maybe create interdisciplinary art that brings together, let's say, music with dance or theater or something that might not happen without some external financial support. So the fact that all these institutional funders have become so important in chamber music, I think, has impacted what the music is that's being written and performed.
Mm-hmm. Has that been a positive step, do you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think not always positive, but I think it adds to the interest of what's happening. Yeah.
In terms of that, something you just said, Jody, how important is a live audience to a performer rather than a recording?
It's everything. Everything?
Just checking.
Yeah. A recording, you get do-overs, first of all, you know, with a live audience. But, no, it's everything. It's absolutely everything you need an audience there. And if the audience doesn't give back, it's not so comfortable. I have to have an audience there. There's no question in my mind. It's vital.
So, where do you think chamber music is going in the next 25 years? And I'll just throw this in. What's the role of YouTube? Is it going to have one? Anyone?
That was out of left field. it's good. It's good. I don't know the answer to that. Let me start with the first one. And I think, Adam may back me up on this. One of the things that's true about chamber music is that it is, and this is actually, I this has been true for a long time, that for economic reasons, it is a fine place for contemporary composers. If you're a contemporary composer and you want to get your piece performed, do you write a string quartet or do you write an orchestra piece? Two guesses. Some composers actually find this out the hard way. I remember talking to a composer once who had written a piece. He was from South Africa, and he had written a piece for, two viola da gambas and some kind of native African instrument and a chamber ensemble. And, he got the one performance, and then it languished in his drawer until he rescored it for a traditional string quartet, and suddenly it was getting played all over the world. And he said, "Oh, why didn't I think of this right to begin with?" But I think that because it's more feasible, it's an obvious place for composers to find their footing and to start out, and then those things kind of tend to scale up. This connects also with what Jody was talking about the entrepreneurialism of composers and performers, that there are, I think, more and more composers and performers on the scene today who kind of get that. Well, now we're going to talk about YouTube, aren't we? Who get that it's on that it's their responsibility to kind of make everything happen that needs to happen. It's no longer a time when you could sort of write the piece and then hand it off, or get the commission and play it and do your thing. I mean, everybody is kind of responsible for making everything happen. And so, where was I going with this? gradually that kind of chamber music that kind of flexibility and feasibility that we had, at one time mostly with chamber music, now kind of scales up to chamber orchestras and larger ensembles that people kind of that performers and composers write for and form together. Nodding your head, so I
yeah,
must be
no,
right.
It does make sense. And but I also see with the whole YouTube electronic thing. I see a divide almost that I don't know, I can't predict the future, but whenever you have a movement like this that's so technological, there's always the Luddites pushing back in the other way. And I see what's happening, now when especially young composers compose for our quartet, what's the first thing they do? They give us a MIDI. And then they're all upset if it doesn't sound like their MIDI, because we don't play like a MIDI. We actually breathe and take time and all of that. So I can see it. Sometimes they get a little irritated. A MIDI for those who don't know. Now you can just, if you have a program like Sibelius or Finale on your computer, and you have it, you just press a button, and it makes a recording of it in nice, happy computer sounds. And it plays exactly the music you want, exactly in the right time. And it's absolutely perfect. And it's probably one of the ugliest things you would ever want to hear. But the young composers are very used to this. And I think YouTube, putting performances up is great, but I almost think the next step, seeing these young kids and seeing the way their minds work, I'm afraid they're going to start composing for avatars, for virtual quartets that will play exactly perfectly, and they can dress them however they want, and they'll be on the internet, and they won't be real. And on the other hand, you will have live performance, in smaller rooms surrounded by audiences who want to feel and hear the music that up close. So I think the technology is going to push in one way, and I think just like any other huge social movement, there's going to be a push in the other way also, which I think is great for both.
I'm going to jump in on the YouTube, yeah, too, because I do think that the culture is increasingly visual, and to be able to see the performance as well as hear it is more and more important. I think it's going to be DVDs of chamber music, not CDs of chamber music, and it makes a huge difference to be able to watch it. I mean, I don't really, I've found that listening to recordings of chamber music, particularly contemporary pieces, is not very satisfying to me. I really want to see a live performance. Everything happens in the performance for me, and I just miss too much of that in a recording. And I think that the collapse of the CD market right now, what's happening on the distribution of music over the web and so forth, might be an opportunity. I mean, maybe there's a way to educate people about the value of live performance and what you get out of it that you don't get from playing a CD anyway. And particularly putting a CD on and while you're cooking dinner. I mean, it's just not the same as paying attention in a concert and really, really being in the experience and being part of it and knowing that it's only going to sound this way this one time. It's not just a repeatable thing.
But you think that the I'm with you completely. But now I want to go back and say that seems to argue against the value of DVDs of chamber music, because it seems like, I mean, my feeling is I either want to be in the concert hall completely immersed in the experience of a live performance, mm-hmm, or I want to be cooking and doing my paying my bills with a CD on. What, yeah, I don't, it seems to me, if I've got to sit in front of my TV and watch the Juilliard String Quartet play Beethoven, then I've kind of got the worst of both worlds.
Well,
but that may just be me. I yeah, no knock on the Juilliard
String Quartet. But there's some people who, you know, what about people who live in places that you can't get really good live performances,
okay,
right there? Or what if, you know, people who are not, don't have mobility issues or whatever? I mean,
well, okay,
there's a market. I think there's a market for all these different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's, at this point, there are several really interesting questions, and if we answer them and there's no rush in good time, we can come back to our other questions. One is, am I correct in noticing a huge increase of chamber concerts, small concerts, all over town compared to decades ago? Is it harder for musicians to make a living?
Why don't you start with the second one?
About harder to make a living. Yeah.
The truth is, I'm punting the first one because I wasn't around decades ago.
Yeah, neither was I. None of us.
We're all
too.
Just babes in the woods, yeah, here, as you can see.
Yeah.
My suspicion is that there are more chamber music concerts than before. I mean, even just certainly in new music, there seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like there's stuff going on, frankly, every night. And I think it's more than before.
I've been around for 25 years, and I'm not sure it's gotten more profuse. Although I could be wrong about that. I mean, it's hard to know. We didn't really come up with an answer for that. I'm sorry.
I think the fact that the conservatory has gotten so much bigger. I mean, it's doubled in size, basically, mm-hmm, at least. And there are so many kids coming out of the conservatory and staying in the city. I think that just getting the email invites from all of my students who are still, mm-hmm, in the city and still playing concerts and doing chamber music, one could go to a concert every night, especially in venues that aren't quite so traditional. Classical Revolution comes to mind. There's Red Poppy. There's all of these different venues where they're playing chamber music, where I'm sure 30 years ago there was no chamber music in those places.
Plus, Jody, to jump on what you said, I mean, email. The fact that you can market concerts by email practically for free means that we at least know about a lot of concerts that before we wouldn't have known about, because they couldn't have afforded to send us a postcard about it, and maybe we wouldn't have looked in the listing in a paper or something.
I think that's really true, and I'm going to jump here to a question, and it's a little odd, but Ruth Felt is in our audience, and she's such a large part of chamber music in the city here. This is a question for you, Ruth, if you feel fine about answering it. And it is, how has the business changed in 30 years, and how has the audience changed? And Anne will bring you a mic.
Ruth Felt, renowned impresario.
I'm Ruth Felt, president and founder of San Francisco Performances. 30 years ago, we started this organization. I can say that I started the organization because of my commitment to chamber music, and I felt at the time that there was such a need here for for the audiences to see and hear the great chamber music ensembles from the nation and the world. And we didn't have in San Francisco in 30 years ago a regular appearances of the major established string quartets or the emerging ones. And I don't know, I haven't done an inventory, but I think my sense is that the sort of exponential rise of chamber music is very real, very, very real here, which I think is great. I mean, it's such an interesting discussion when people talk about the music, the audiences of classical music dying. And yet, you know, if you look at what goes on in the Bay Area, it's hardly dying. And even though I would say that we're as challenged as anyone in terms of the percentage of capacity at our concerts, I can't say that the audience is smaller because there's so much more that they have to choose from. So it's sort of, you know, hard to really analyze. There was another part of that question? Or not?
Well, how has the business changed and the audience changed?
Oh, well, just one thing I would say that I think is really exciting for classical music, and it's certainly true for the way we program and what I see around me, is so much more interest and vitality in contemporary music, contemporary compositions, and I think that is truly such an exhilarating fact about the, you know, way in which classical music is thriving in many respects. I can just say that in the early 80s, when I think about it now, it's sort of astounding, but when we would program Shostakovich's chamber music piece, I mean, it was like everybody was just sort of like in horror, or, I mean, it was, and the critics universally were just dismissive, like, this, who, you know, how can you do this? you weren't among them. No. This was before your time, Jeff. Anyway, so that is a change, I think, and it's a good one.
Good.
Thank you so much for responding.
And a follow-up question from someone in our audience. What new music is being written for chamber music groups, and how would you characterize it? Which groups play it? Which local groups play it?
Well, there's a number of local groups that play new chamber music. One is the group that I manage, the San Francisco Contemporary Music Players, but there's also a group called Earplay. There's one called Empyrean that's based at UC Davis. There's a very good group of younger musicians called SF Sound.
Left Coast Chamber Ensemble,
right.
There's a group that I haven't yet heard called the Adorno Ensemble.
Oh, the Adorno Ensemble, right.
Okay.
Right. So there's many other groups like the Ives Quartet that Jody is in that play a mix of classical and contemporary pieces, including world premieres.
It's part of our mission, actually. We want to frame contemporary music, sort of make a sandwich of contemporary music around more well-known classical works. But we had, I think, three commissions last year, four commissions. We're playing one on Friday, one of our commissions for the opening of the Day of Chamber Music. We work with a lot of composers, and as do many, many quartets in the area. There are several reasons for that. I mean, the most obvious is we want to play music written for us. It's very fun to collaborate with composers. This piece by Dan Becker was great because he would come to our house and record us on his computer and then play little snippets and then give us four bars, and we would play these sort of mysterious four bars, and he would go away for 3 weeks and come back and have four more bars. It was a fascinating experience. But also there are also outside influences. Obviously, there are a lot of grant opportunities for working with composers, and I think most quartets, since they do want to commission works and they do want to work with composers, and there is the opportunity to apply for grants for this, it's a win-win situation. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Of course, yeah. They do a little contemporary, too, I think. Yeah.
And they played very early on at Old First Concerts, I have to say. Yeah. So we're especially pleased. And there's some little pink flyers. I'm going to do a shameless plug. Back to questions from our...
The date
October 9th. Pardon? The Kronos Quartet, October 9th, at Old First Concerts as a benefit performance for our 40th anniversary. Here's an interesting question. Well, there are a couple of questions. Are there opportunities for chamber musicians who never went beyond the high school or junior high level, not necessarily to perform in public, but with others? And this is one of two questions along those lines. So if you're looking for a chamber group to play with, a personal chamber group, how do you go about that?
There's a huge organization. California, they just changed their name. Thank you. Chamber Musicians of Northern California. CMC.org.
CMNC.
CMNC.org. Yes, I went and coached for them, I think, once or twice, and they're the perfect organization for this. They get together and play chamber music, and then they get professional musicians to come in on 2-day workshops and coach them. They're fantastic, and they're all over California.
The ACMP?
Amateur music. Yeah, one of them changed their name, and I'm not sure which one. Yeah.
They have directories, and if you're traveling
Absolutely.
To the United States, you can take your directory, mm-hmm. and you're here for a while. You can call somebody up and say, hey, mm-hmm.
So what organization is it that has the directories for national directories? Is it ACMP has a national directory if you go to a city and visit it and you're a musician and you want to get together a chamber ensemble? Just contact them. I'd like to host small-scale recitals in my home. How do I find a group or a solo performer, and how much should I expect to pay?
What group? professional, students, one could run the gamut from... Music to Go at the conservatory, which sends out student groups to play in different homes.
I remember when my aunt and uncle got married.
Music to Go.
There was a trio
Absolutely.
Of kids from the conservatory performing.
They're still going. Yep.
That's great.
Oh, yeah. They've been around, and students love it, and it's a great way to get to know some students also. And whatever, if you want a more serious concert, then they can come and do that. If you want... an established professional group, then the best thing is to contact their manager or just go to one of their concerts and ask them.
Thank you. And here's a last question I have. I'm noticing jazz chamber cropping up in private houses on both sides of the bay, usually Sunday later afternoon. Might not classical go this way, too? I'm loving it. And I was going to ask also... Is jazz chamber music?
Yes. I mean, sure. But I'm interested in this idea of sort of pickup ensembles and like that. I mean, I guess it kind of ties in with the question before, but chamber music's very nature to be performed by those who are listening rather than, I don't mean to retrace my steps here.
No, I wanted to chime in on what you had said about that at the beginning, Josh, because it seems to me when you talk about where chamber music headed in the next 25 years, that it has to be more participatory, you know, than it is, or it's hard to think that it can stay as healthy as it should be. And particularly in the area of contemporary music, it's pretty hard to find pieces for amateur chamber musicians by the composers who are considered to be the leading contemporary, you know, serious classical, quote-unquote classical music composers of our time. That seems to me to be a problem. And we would do programs with the contemporary music players at School of the Arts or at Lowell High, where we were coaching students. It was very hard to find repertoire that, you know, pretty good, dedicated music students at a high school level could play by leading composers of our time. That's something wrong with that.
How would you fix that? Beethoven and Haydn wrote for the amateurs because there were financial incentives. How are we going to get those in place?
Well, I think a foundation would have to take it on as a project.
Ah.
Yeah.
Ah is right.
Yes. There's the rub. Where's the money? Show me the money.
Yeah. If I could just comment on the house concert, I lived in Europe for many years, and that was the norm of chamber music there. And I must say that was a big shock moving back here that there weren't these organizations, and they're really loose organizations, but just basically friends who gang together and have a series of house concerts. One needs to have a large house. Maybe that's one factor in San Francisco. It's not so easy, but it's coming a little bit. There's one in Marin, a very nice house concert series there. They're coming back a little bit, but I do miss that, I must say. I very much miss that, and that was the chamber musicians' bread and butter in Europe for a very long time, and many, many very established groups would play on house concert series. It wasn't just something for groups who weren't touring. It was actually a friendly stop during a tour. And I wish that would come back more, or at least start here.
Do you see a way of it beginning again here?
Yes. The one in Marin, that was founded by Tanya Tompkins. She started that series, and I think it's doing quite well. And if anyone else wants to start one, I think it would
be
great.
Is it in her actual house?
No, it's in friends' homes in Marin, and I think it's in Berkeley now, too, actually. More homes in Berkeley also. I've played on it a few times, and it's I must say it's very fun. And you get to see people's homes, too. So that's that's the added benefit.
There is one in the city here by someone, I believe, whose last name is Pearl. And I think she's been doing it. Kathy Pearl, yes.
Chattanooga. Yeah,
Chattanooga
on that
Street.
Too. Yeah.
That's it. I don't know how frequently she does them, but...
She did, I think, about a series of about five concerts, five or six in a season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see. Are there any more... Does anyone have any other questions for our panelists?
I'd be on the dais, but basically there's a place called Shea Haney, and it's actually just south of Bernal, and if you pay $20, you bring food and wine, and you get established groups, pretty good ones, and it's once a month. There's another one in the East Bay in Oakland, and so it's not just a jam thing. It's fairly good quality. It's like chamber music, only it's jazz.
And where is that located exactly?
If you Google Shea and then Haney, you'll see the one in San Francisco.
So it's Shea, Haney.com?
Just Google Shea. I think it's just Google Shea.
Google Shaney, H-A-N-E-Y, and you might find an interesting chamber music home concert. A very good one, shall we say. Anyway, do our panelists have anything else they want to offer about this wonderful topic?
I just wanted to offer one caveat about the. There is a slight difference between the jazz evenings and getting a chamber music group into a venue like that. We have to rehearse. By the very nature of jazz, you can get in a bunch of musicians who've never played together and have the most amazing evening. It could happen with chamber musicians, but in a classical revolution does that. They're always calling me, asking, "Bring your viola when you come," you know. So and they read together. However, a chamber music group, an established chamber music group, it's a little different to walk into a venue like that. We actually have to rehearse and treat it like a concert, no matter what. Unfortunately, it's not as improvisational, at least what we do because of the written page. So just the very nature of the beast, it's slightly different.
I have a question for Adam. I'm just curious. We've been talking about chamber music and contemporary music, but of course, chamber music is a broad and flexible term. And I'm wondering whether, in your time with the Players, there were projects that you all took on that seemed to you to kind of push against that boundary and maybe move into some other realm where, you know, chamber music was not, the term chamber music might not apply. And if so, how you dealt with that?
Well, I don't know. I think pretty much we were doing, I mean, chamber music is defined by Chamber Music America as, you know, one on a part music.
Oh, is that really?
That's yeah. That's, oh. And usually unconducted, although in the case of contemporary chamber music, a conductor, you know, is often needed. And so I think usually that was what we stuck with. Of course, we did some solo some presentation of solos. But no, I think it felt like chamber music. I don't think it got away from that really. It's really different. I mean, it's really different whenever, you know, when you're watching musicians and each musician is playing, they're the only one playing what they're playing versus an orchestra where a whole section is playing the same thing. It's a different experience. And one of the things that's changed, you know, in contemporary chamber music, all through the 70s and 80s, contemporary chamber music, a lot of it was written for this ensemble called the Piero Lunaire Ensemble, flute, clarinet, violin, cello, piano, and percussion, named after the piece Piero Lunaire by Schoenberg. And that was music, that was an ensemble where the instruments didn't blend together very well. They could all be playing, and if you worked at it, you could kind of pick out what each instrument was playing because they just didn't blend together. And so it lent itself to a kind of counterpoint kind of music where you wanted to follow each part separately. And certainly contemporary music has gotten away from that particular ensemble. Composers mostly don't want to write for it anymore. They want to do something else. And one reason, I think, is that they want to be able to do music that, you know, where you have blends of sound and where it's not all about each individual instrument doing its own separate thing. So that's another change.
When I joined the board of the Friends of Chamber Music, that was, I think, one of my first meetings, and we had to define chamber music because we
friends of it.
We're friends of it. We had to know who we were friends of, and we have affiliates, and all of these groups who are asking, and it's tricky. Mm-hmm. It is tricky. I mean, if you have a single person and they're playing with a computer or looping, is that chamber music? Is jazz chamber music? It was a very, very long discussion.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I want to remind you, speaking of chamber music, to pick up one of these flyers and visit us on Chamber Music Today. Chamber Music Day, you'll be hearing contemporary, jazz, Latin, classical, all kinds of chamber music on Saturday, September 26th at Old First Church. Chamber Music Day. Please do come. It'll be a really wonderful day from 12:30 to 8. You can wander in and out, stay for as much as you want, stay for the whole day, be delicious. So, and I thank our panelists for a wonderful discussion.
Thank you, panel.
Thank you.
Thanks so much from the Arts Forum to our panel, Kathy Barr, Joshua Cosman, Jody Levitz, and Adam Frey, for giving us your thoughts and ideas, and our guest mini speaker, Ruth Felt of San Francisco Performances. Thank you so much for joining in. We would like to make sure you all have a chance to get to the music marathon on Saturday, so get your ears ready. And our thanks to Friends of Chamber Music and to Old First Concerts for sponsoring this program. And thanks to our audience today and our radio audience. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 105th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.